young.
Okay, call to order. Roll call. Council is present except for Jennifer Grobe and Roy McIntyre. City Administrator Teresa Hill. Jason Moran. That's good with that?
The others.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the consent agenda.
I will make a motion that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it.
Actually, do we need to do the regular agenda too, right? Or?
Yep. I do have an addition to the agenda.
Okay.
So I'd like to add on the voting operations technology resource account agreement with Mercer County.
That would be under
new business?
8F.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda with the addition of 8F, voter operations technology and election resources.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Ready for the public hearings, or do we need to go to, did we set those for 6 or 6:30?
6.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
I'll make a motion that can we open both of them at the same time?
Motion to close the regular meeting and go into a public hearing.
Can we move to open both at the same time?
You're already open for your regular meeting.
No, for the public hearings.
You can do the public hearing. Do a motion just to open public hearing.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to close the regular meeting.
And open
the public hearing.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Here's Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Yes, please.
For your consideration here tonight, this is actually a public hearing. It's regarding ordinance number 99. It's the ordinance prohibiting the use of THC products in certain public spaces. Some of this did come right out of the statute. Other places within the statute, essentially the legislature left it to you guys to decide. Basically what the legislature did in this, they treated it very similar to what they did with alcohols or tobacco several years ago. They basically said, okay, we're going to leave it up to the municipalities to regulate if they want to regulate, and they'll be the ones that can say where it can be used and where it can't be used. And so that's what you guys are wrestling with here tonight. What I did with some input from Teresa and from your chief of police is I set forth certain areas, certain places where use of THC products would not be allowed, such as, and poor Teresa here, can't use at the city hall. Poor Chief Meskin can't use at the fire hall. Chief of police can't use at the police station. Public can't use at the park, the beach, any playground, no ball field, concession stand, school, library grounds. Those are really already covered, but I have them in here just for ease. And then along with some other public places. Flowing from the discussion that you guys had in August, it seemed to me that you guys wanted to allow the low-level stuff, the beverages and the edibles, to be sold in your liquor establishments. And so what I did is I did a carve-out. This ordinance would not apply to the low-potency beverages that are currently in place right now. So that's what we did.
Okay. So do people have to get a license then or not to sell?
To sell the hard stuff, they will, yes. Okay. To sell the low-level stuff, it's possible. The state will require them to get a license for that at some point in time. Like these seltzers and these little edibles, there is a possibility that the state will require even that to be licensed. When that licensing regimen will be set up, I have no idea. Originally, they thought sometime mid-next year, and it's very possible it could still be mid-next year. But it's looking like later next year, maybe even 2025.
Before they're regulated and licensed.
Correct.
Do we need to be concerned at this point over the sale of those in within a certain distance of the school or that kind of thing?
We'll be addressing that later this winter, but for right now, no.
Okay.
No. And this ordinance would only apply, you know, again, to the use of that harder stuff in public.
How did we leave it, or did you put it in here for use of that during festivals, say hot summer nights, bullhead days, that kind of thing?
Can't.
Generally in public, it's not?
Can't.
Okay.
Correct. The low-level seltzers, the low-level edibles that you can purchase in the bar, that wouldn't change. You just can't use the harder stuff out on the sidewalk or in the street.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And I think that's what you guys wanted?
Yeah. Does it prohibit any business from selling it? Any businesses or type of businesses or not?
No.
Okay.
No.
So I'm not saying they do, but Davis's could sell it if they wanted to.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I...
Correct. The low-level stuff.
Yes.
The high-level stuff, at some point in time, they'll have to be licensed. They'll have to be regulated.
Right.
And by the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you want to call for public comment?
Would anybody like to comment on this issue? If they do, please approach the podium.
More just for information, county passed their ordinance today.
Okay.
So for anything outside of, you know, the unincorporated or in the unincorporated area, we passed ordinance today.
And what does, just for our reference, what does the county ordinance look like in comparison to ours?
Yeah, I'd say pretty darn similar, I would guess. The one question that came out was that, you know, you can have it like in your own home, you know, like in your yard. There was a question like, okay, what if my neighbors are smoking it and it's like bothering me, right?
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that there is that there is a piece in the law that as far as exposing minors to the smoke, right, or whatever,
right,
and to where the way we left that is that would really be up to, you know, local law enforcement to make that judgment call between the neighbors in a situation like that. That was the only question that came up of any consequence during the public hearing portion that we had.
Yeah.
I think that's a good call in that situation. Yeah. I know it puts the onus on law enforcement rather than regulating it, but I think common sense should prevail on that one. So.
I think how
we've got it is any public place where children could be exposed to secondhand smoke. There's some wiggle room there, a little bit.
I don't.
Okay, so, all right, this brings a question then. So, in our case, what Commissioner was just talking about there, so then what can a neighbor say that, you know, this is in my own yard, I'm well within my rights to smoke it, and if your kids don't like it, they can look the other way.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. could probably try to wedge it in with our public nuisance ordinance. But if you have someone that's smoking it on their own property, which is what the law allows, it's going to be pretty difficult to prosecute somebody for secondhand drift smoke, unless it is really a habitual type problem.
Or they're intentionally trying to do it.
Yeah. Or they're intentionally trying to do it. Yeah, if that was to happen, then I'd probably bring some sort of a nuisance action.
I suppose it's no different than somebody smoking a cigarette in their backyard and blowing it all over a pipe or whatever, cigar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to some extent.
Okay.
Do you see a reason for us to add any teeth to that, Jason?
I don't know if I'd wade into that, because then you're really regulating what somebody can do legally on their own property.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'd be a little hesitant about that.
Sure.
I think we talked about this covered everything right out of the states. Already had all this stuff laid out. Each one of those things that we read through was pretty much all laid out by the state.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of questions that people, citizens, will ask.
And they're going to come up, and there is going to more than likely be some legislative fixes between now and this time next year. Some of it we're just going to have to deal with.
Sure.
I think we've tried to cover it about as well as we can.
I agree. Any other comments? Make a motion that we close the public hearing, accept the second reading of the proposed Ordinance 99 and close the public hearing.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
And then I'll make a motion that we adopt Ordinance 99 as written.
And I'll second that.
Favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Any comments or anything? Discussion? Should we move on to number 5, Teresa?
Yes. So your first item is a resolution 23-027 accepting the variance Brian and Jerry Thinus, I think is how you say it. Planning and zoning did meet, public hearing was conducted, and recommendation that it be allowed.
Can I, let's see, where is this one again?
Oh, Lagoons.
In Lagoon, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
From what when I looked at it, I don't see any problem. It's not going to encroach any more than the house is. It does fit with the area out there. Is the addition going to be above what our current floodplain?
They have to be constructed. They're also going to adjust their home so that it would be constructed above the floodplain.
They're going to lift that up.
Yep, they're going to lift that up. Yeah. Okay. They have crawl space under, so they're going to do that all in one.
Sure. I make a motion that we adopt 2023-027.
And I will second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The 5th Street handicap parking.
So we had a individual in the area contact both the school and the city about providing more handicapped parking at the school. There's definitely a need for it. So what we're looking at recommending is to allow for two more spaces and see how that goes. One in front of the current one that's just in front of the doors and one to the south of that. That allows a little better access to it. So with your permission, we would be looking at allowing two more handicap stalls. And I did put 6th Street on the original agenda, and that was revised to say 5th Street. So
So right to the west of the school.
Yep, right the gymnasium doors. Yep. So it'll be two as you're coming out, two to the north and one to the south.
The only other true handicap parking is in the parking lots, correct?
I don't even know what they have in the parking lots.
Okay.
For handicap parking.
I think there's one or two there.
Yeah. We don't have any on Packland Street, correct?
There used to be one to the north. I don't know if that was put back in place. I'd have to drive down there again. There was one just before you hit the highway.
Okay. Yeah, I think there is one.
There was one there. Whether or not construction did away with that, I don't think so. I haven't looked at it. But
I agree. I think we need at least a couple more designated down there. And the area that they're talking about makes sense, by the main entrance of the high school.
Right. Especially with the number of grandparents and stuff that go to the games and all that. Yeah.
As a side note, I did swing down through there this afternoon and look at that fire lane. Mm-hmm. Other than the hydrant placement, I'm not quite sure why it's where it is. So definitely check with the state fire marshal on that one. I'm sure they're going to want something somewhere along there, but I don't know where and if that can be moved or altered. So.
Okay.
The parking places down there, there's conversation of them having portable signs that they can bring out for events and place down that street. I don't have any objection to them putting as many additional handicap parking places as they would like to for whatever events they see fit.
Yeah.
But I do like adding two more for sure.
Okay, I'll make a motion then that we add or we allow that. It's not a resolution, is it? But
just okay. A request.
Yeah, a request so that we allow them to make two more handicapped spots on that street to the west of the school.
And I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Under the unfinished business, what time do we got here?
6:20, just about 6:19.
We gonna do 6:30 for our citizen time, or are we?
We can do that whenever, Bill.
We can do it right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So we can open it up to citizen time.
Yep.
If anybody would like to address the council, please step to the podium and give your name.
All right, I'll leave. Good evening. My name is Brenda Novak, and I've been a licensed family child care provider and a small business owner in Waterville for 20 years. As a child care provider, teacher, and advocate for children, I would like to address the proposed Ordinance 99, prohibiting the use of THC products in public places. Family child care facilities and daycare facilities fall under the Minnesota Clean Air Act. And as providers, under Rule 2, we are not allowed to have anyone smoke on our premises during business hours, and that also includes THC. And according to the CDC, children exposed to THC are potentially at risk of negative health effects. According to the Harvard Health Publishing, studies show that even being around secondhand marijuana, it gets in your system. And I would be very sad to see that happening to our children. I'd like to make a recommendation that you add licensed family child cares, and daycare centers to Ordinance 99 so that our children can have a future, a healthy future. Thank you.
Will, if I may?
Yes.
Actually, they've already passed it. But I do, there's, here comes Mr. McIntyre. There is no question, though, that it is covered under item number T, any location covered by the Minnesota Clean Air Indoor Act, the freedom to breathe, or any amendments to the same. So if you have somebody that is using on your facility or you're having a problem with it, I would tell you to let law enforcement know right away, and we would issue a citation.
What I would like to see, though, is it actually listed on there, since you have schools and parks, libraries, and other public places. Family child care providers are a public place. During our business hours, we are letting the public in and out of our facilities, even though we are residential homes. So I would like it listed on the ordinance.
How hard would that be to do?
We can very easily add it with your permission tonight.
Well, what do you guys think? I think that's a good idea.
The problem is, during citizen time, we can't officially act on anything.
But you can go back and visit it.
Yeah, you can.
You can revisit it after citizen's time is done.
Okay.
This is just discussion.
Yep. Yeah. Gotcha.
So, Art, what do you guys think?
If somebody wants to add it, we certainly can.
I guess I wouldn't. Do you think there would be any negative effect by doing that?
No.
Okay.
No.
Like he said, it's already covered.
It's really already covered.
Just to add it is a call to the
public.
How
I would word it is I would give it its own designation, and it would simply be any licensed daycare facility.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think it's okay to outline that. What do you think?
I agree.
Okay. Mr. McIntyre, what do you think?
I'm okay with it.
Okay.
So that's something we'll revisit. We'll go back.
We'll circle back right after citizen time then is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone?
Yeah, can we do a couple things?
Yeah.
For the record, Dave Chrysler, County Commissioner. Already mentioned the county passed their own cannabis ordinance here this morning at our board meeting, so it covers the unincorporated areas of the county, and then we know that cities have been kind of doing their own thing. Also, I know too that there was a meeting, you know, that was held where cities and townships and the county all got together to kind of try to get on the same page. So that was good to see, and I, from what I've heard, that something very similar is going to happen pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
There may be some subtle differences, but I think it's going to be pretty much pretty consistent everywhere. An update, remember one of the last meetings I mentioned that we've made an application to the state for some bonding money, for basically money to be used for a match for flood control projects. And so we did hear very recently now that we will be on the tour stop for the bonding committee, and so it made it that far, which if you don't make it that far, you're kind of almost, you don't get much consideration in next year's legislative session. And so we'll have a chance to do the show and tell on why we think it's a good idea to do that on October 12th. So House and Senate Bonding Committee will be here. I don't have a time yet, but you'll get more information, and I'm sure that Joe will get a hold of you and Environmental Services to figure out how we best lay out that and see how much time we have and where decide where we're going to bring them. My guess is we'll probably for sure, you know, go out, select a couple spots out in the countryside to kind of like show them, all right, these would be areas that we would probably use. You know, maybe not those specific areas, but give them like an idea of here's where we put some areas to hold back water, okay, for example. So just to give you an update that it's the wheels are still moving on that. At least we made it on the schedule for House and Senate bonding to come and visit. And again, without that, you don't have much of a chance next year. It's still no guarantee for next year, but at least it starts to get you kind of put in line. Then the only other thing is just update you on a couple of road projects. There's nothing that's obviously just right in this immediate area, but the roundabout north of Montgomery opened last Friday. But it's still an adventure to get there from here. So they won't be done with the work on Highway 13 as it goes through Montgomery until mid-October. Okay, so just plan accordingly, but nonetheless, like I said, that roundabout opened last Friday, and otherwise, all of our other road projects are right dead on schedule. We were concerned with some of them with to get them done before school started, and the two that we were worried about both got done on Friday afternoon. So it shouldn't have impeded anything with schools. Like I said, there was a couple that got a little nip and tuck a little bit. It got to be, quite honestly, just too hot for a few days to try and lay asphalt and have it stay where you want it to stay. Mm-hmm. And so they had to take a break for a few days. So, and other than that, we are in kind of heavy budget planning for 2024. The meeting where we'll set the preliminary levy will be on the 26th of September. And so we've had a series of budget meetings, and another one today. We got our final work session for the budget will be on the 19th. And so we're still working through those. No different, I know, than, you know, you're going through that same exact process. One of the things that so far has, again, so far, and I think this creates, again, some interest in this area, we're looking to set aside some money for water quality projects, right? And so far that has survived. Today was kind of the first round of, if you think of it in a football term, first round of kind of trimming the roster down a little bit, survived that, and then we'll see what happens on the 19th. But that would be basically kind of help with some matching money as we look at some water quality projects. So. That's it for me, unless there is.
What would be determined a water quality project?
That's a good question.
Have you laid that out yet?
Not really. I mean, it may end up being some matches that have to occur on some things. I don't think that we would go in and fully fund something. Mm-hmm. So it may be a match that you would work together with a lake association on. It may be a match that you're working on with another grant, mm-hmm. Where you've got to come up with matching money. And we just don't have dedicated dollars for that right now. Mm-hmm. And we know that it's an important issue, and we're just looking to kind of dip our toe in the water with it and see where it brings us.
Sure.
We also want to make sure to keep it just in case with this bonding request, if there ends up being a match that can kind of sweeten the pot a little bit, that mm-hmm. if we bring a match to the table, that we have got a better shot at getting that $1.2 million. Because then you're talking serious money to do things, right? And we just wanted to keep it there for that. So not dedicated to anything yet, but we better pay attention to it.
Any updates or word on when they're planning on redoing, the state is redoing 13 between Montgomery and Waterville? Have you heard anything on that? That poor highway is crumbling.
Yeah. The news is not... So far, the news on that is not good. The two kind of next major state highways that they'll end up doing will be Highway 99 from the 6 mile corner going west into the center. That is not scheduled till 2029. Okay, and then 2030 is when the Highway 13 from Waterville to basically to Montgomery is scheduled. Way from now.
Have they said why? The last time I heard, they were talking 27 or 28. Now it's 30?
2030. And we sat down, the county board had a meeting with MnDOT about five weeks ago, I think, maybe. Anyway, at that meeting, we drilled them on that issue. Okay, I mean, to the point where after the meeting, the folks from MnDOT contacted our administrator and said they haven't had a county board ever ask them questions like that meeting went.
Sure.
I mean, we're respectful, but they got the point, okay, that it'll be a goat path if they don't do anything between now and 2030.
It'll be a goat path if they don't do anything between now and 25.
Yeah, I mean, so we were very clear on what our expectations were, and for a couple things that we talked about, okay? Number one is that if that thing just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, okay, people will avoid driving it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, where's that? What's that going to do? Then it puts additional pressure on county roads, right?
Yep.
So then, as a county, which you're all paying taxes to the county too, mm-hmm. we won't have the lifespan out of those county roads either. Okay, yeah, so it's not just a discussion about 13. It's what's the spillover effect that occurs when something either gets so rough or so dangerous that people avoid it and go somewhere else. And so that's one of the things we talked about. The other thing that MnDOT brought up is that, you know, they know they want to, as a part of this, probably do something with the bridge here in town. Okay, that bridge's kind of more natural lifespan. It's got probably up till 2030. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so we said, okay, well, that's fine. You know, you did a piecemeal deal in Montgomery, okay, just within the city limits. Mm-hmm. Why not look at doing a piecemeal thing, just do highway, you know, 13, and when it gets to the bridge, stop. Mm-hmm. Come back and do the bridge at a later date. Now, I get it. It's probably a little more efficient to do all at once, but it's not like they haven't done this before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, as far as doing whole stretches,
yeah.
Two pieces and parts. Now, they do have they do the testing on this to see where they go, as far as which roads are of kind of more importance. They literally got a vehicle that is decked out with a whole bunch of sensors and so on to look at ride quality and that sort of thing. And so they said that's what they use that data as kind of their main piece from a standpoint of you know, determining where these roads are going to end up being. Now, a couple of things can change. One is that, you know, you still have got money getting kind of released out of the federal infrastructure piece, right? And so that, there could be things that get kind of sped up because of how some of that goes, gets doled out. The other thing is that, you know, there should be increases in the amount of state money that go into the repairs side of things too, because at the last legislative session, you know, they approved increasing the gas tax and also indexing it to inflation. Okay, so now it's capped from the standpoint of how much it could go up in a given year, but nonetheless it did get indexed. And so as we go out, we'll see how much more additional money ends up flowing to that could speed things up too. The one thing that they still kind of failed to deal with is that, you know, as we get more electric cars, well, then they're not paying into that system.
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
And so that they've really failed to address from the standpoint of, you know, if the electrics don't take off, then it's maybe not such a big deal. But if we're sitting here 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now, and all of a sudden we got like electrics everywhere, and they haven't figured out how to have them put money into that system. They put a little bit in when they get licensed, but it's like, in the big scheme of things, it's like nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So that's another thing we need to kind of balance, is looking at expectations as to what may happen on the gas tax side. So.
Well, what moved them along on 13 from Waterville to Waseca? That was scheduled for 2026, and now it's completed.
Yeah, and that...
Somebody made noise.
Yeah, and I think, and sometimes that can happen, right? There, especially if something, and it's terrible, but especially if something ends up to where you end up with kind of a rash of like accidents, and or especially if there are deaths that occur, then if there are changes that need to occur to the road in order to deal with that, they'll move up the list. I mean, that is one thing that will happen. Okay, you hate to see that as a criteria, but that is one of the criteria. Other than that, the only thing I can tell you is that we're not giving up. I mean, they were very clear how we stood on that whole deal when we left that meeting. And I'm not afraid to keep banging the drum on this thing, and I'm not going to back off on it. And so I get it. It's a terrible road. And it's not getting any better. And we even said, too, I mean, we get it. Maybe you can't do a full, you know, reconstruct. But if you can just come and put like a skin on it to kind of help maybe get us to that more full reconstruct in 2030, and they said, okay, we hear you, and so we'll see where it goes. Because even something like that can at least improve the the kind of the surface, you know, yep. where you're not getting thrown all over the place.
Well, it's even looking at it, driving it on a daily basis, it's crumbling at the edges.
Yeah.
I mean, that roadbed is shot.
Yep.
So, anyway, thank you.
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of semi-traffic and going to the ethanol plant, Janesville, which I love the economic development part of that and the market and so on, but we're seeing a lot of those semis now going off on county roads just because they can't stand the ride on 13.
Yep.
And so, just like I mentioned before, and that's what I banged home to them, is that there's consequences when you don't take care of state roads because it'll end up coming down on counties.
Yep.
I have a whole other topic. Are you guys done?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Another topic. Where do you think county is going to come out on this new system that the police need coming up?
Oh, the records management system?
Yeah.
So, good question. So, the county got over $600,000 of the one-time public safety money. I know cities got money, too. The county's portion now is over $600,000, like $630,000 or something like that. So it's a good chunk of money, okay? We thought up until a few months ago that the company that was supporting that information system or information management system was going to quit supporting it, okay? They're going to get out and not do updates anymore, which forces you into getting something new. Our sheriff department was in the process of interviewing companies to replace it, but then got word from the company that they are going to continue on.
And that's LETG?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're going to continue on, but they also didn't say we're going to continue on forever. They just said, you know, kind of ignore what we said from the standpoint that it's probably going to be over, like, right now. So in our budget discussions, we're having some discussions on that right now. From the standpoint of we've not made a final decision on what we're going to do with that $600,000 plus. We're probably going to bank it, okay, and dedicate it towards that, or at least bank a portion of it.
Yes.
Okay, so it may not be all of it, maybe a portion, maybe it's all. We haven't made that final decision yet, because that bill could be towards $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's what it is, man, that's, if you haven't kind of built up some money to kind of handle that, that's a shock to the system from a standpoint of what you have to come up with for levy dollars.
Right.
So that's where we're at with it right now. It's not necessarily new information, but relatively new information is that, you know, we don't have a sunset date for the system.
Okay.
And so hopefully, you know, that can get pushed out a little bit, you know, further.
Well, is
we're kind of at their mercy.
But you're thinking for 2024, we're probably okay.
Everything we've heard so far, yes.
Okay.
So at least, but again, what we're probably going to do is bank either some or
sure.
all of that 600 and some. Because I know there's been some cities that have said, well, would you like to share? And, you know, cities have already gotten their money. I get it. Ours is a bigger check that comes to the county. But we also incur the largest amount of expense implementing that new management system because we need, like, all of the modules that come with it, whereas cities don't. So your city police department doesn't need to use all of the stuff that's within it, so it should be cheaper, so to speak. I'm not saying it's going to be cheap, but you won't need all of it, whereas the county does. You know, because the county's got the jail, you know, and all of that other stuff that comes with it.
Okay. I think there'll probably be some more discussion on that because that is weighing heavily on our budget for the future, you know, looking at what might happen there.
Yeah.
A lot of us think, you know, the county should take more of that responsibility. But
yes, I was going to ask if there's, because you're going to be using it, is there a way for the cities to come in as riders under your contract?
I think as much of that as can happen makes sense. And one of the things I know our sheriff has said repeatedly is that he's not going to lock into a system until he's also sat down and talked with all of the police departments too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that's all got to work seamlessly together.
Right.
And so I think they've got it down to like two or three. But then, like I said, they just kind of put the brakes on it once our existing provider said, well, we're going to be in this for a while yet.
Okay.
But again, we don't have, they didn't tell us how long.
All that does is buy us some
months?
Time.
I don't know if it's 48 months.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, all that did was buy us some time.
Yeah.
Which is okay, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does, but I mean, it's still something that we need to kind of plan for.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should at least be setting some money aside. Yeah.
Keep us in the loop on that, if you will.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Thank you for allowing me the time.
Mm-hmm. Mayor, I'd like to circle back to the Ordinance 99 conversations we were having earlier, given the input we got during citizen time.
I agree. You should.
So I guess I'd like to propose then that you add to the ordinance daycares.
Licensed daycare. I think simple motion, second vote will do it.
Okay. I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Teresa, can we move on to the new business on here?
Sure can. Before we get going, we have a presentation packet here.
Darren Lee.
Darren Lee, I'm sorry.
And I've got some additional materials here that I was going to pass out, if that's all
okay.
Right.
If public, two extras here.
Thank you. Thanks, Teresa. We can share. Thank you. Darren, thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Good. Thank you.
All right, so good evening, everyone. My name is Darren Lee with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And so we just kind of like to go around in the summertime, and I guess it's getting close to fall here now, just to give a recap to our members about the legislative session, talk a little bit about what we did and what some of the outcomes were. So just a reminder, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities is the only organization in the state that represents city governments outside of the metro area. We're the only organization that does that. And I think if you look in your packet that Teresa handed out, those are some of the, on the second slide there, you'll see some of the issues that we work on broadly. Local government aid, of course, as you're familiar with, is probably our number one issue that we work on. We do some economic development is another one. Transportation, which we talked a little bit about already, I'll get to a little bit about that. And then environment and some labor stuff. So broadly, some of our top priorities on the third slide there, you'll see there's, so I should say there's a ton of stuff to get to. I won't get to everything that happened at the legislative session just because there was so much, but let me just go through what I handed out, because what I don't get to is should be information in what I handed out. So you've got our session report here, which sort of just gives a little summary and some of the outcomes there. And then this sheet has just a, sort of an outline of some of the issues that were proposed and what the outcomes were. And then that is followed by an LGA. It has some information about LGA and then specific to Waterville, what the outcome there was. We have something on public safety aid here, talking about what that can be used for. Our labor employee relations program, we have a sheet on that, and then some save the dates stuff there. So if I don't get to it, hopefully it's in there, and of course you can always ask me, I can follow up with you. But, so number one, $150 million in LGA increase, a formula update, was one of the first things we wanted to work on this year. Bonding bill, which has all those critical infrastructure projects, water, roads and bridges, lead inventory and removal. So we worked on a bill to remove lead in service lines for drinking water. And then corridors of commerce. And since I don't have too much on transportation later, I will say on transportation, one thing that's new this year is for small city streets, cities under 5,000, there's going to be dedicated funding for small city streets. That's a program that, it's not a new program, but previously it was just kind of like whenever the legislature decided to put money into it. Now with the new delivery fee that the legislature enacted, that will have ongoing funding that will ramp up through 2027. It's not a lot to start, but you know, it's at least an initial amount of dedicated funding for that. And then corridors of commerce, since this was kind of talked about already with the commissioner, on that, some of the projects, that funds some of those projects where safety is an issue. And previously, in some previous rounds of funding with that, there was concern about how much of that went to the metro area and just sort of adjacent to. And so we think with this new language that we were able to get passed, that should equalize that distribution of those funds. So it should be 3/3, so kind of geographically a third within Ramsey and Hennepin, and then a third in that ring surrounding Ramsey and Hennepin, and then a third to the rest of the state beyond that. So it's split third, 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 but that way at least we know that at least a third of that money has to go to Greater Minnesota. So we think that's a positive outcome. And Highway 14 is one of those projects that was funded through Corridors of Commerce. So that's one. And then, let's see, a couple other ones that we worked on there, child care and housing, which I think is on your sheet. So, big picture, so we came into the session, it was a crazy session. There was our priorities, CGMC priorities, DFL priorities, and then other interest groups. There wasn't a whole lot of attention given to the Republican priorities because they're the minority in both bodies of the legislature. Of course, the governor is a Democrat, so the Republicans weren't listened to a whole lot. Nevertheless, we got some pretty good policy outcomes, we think, on fiscal stuff. The policy was a little more mixed. But starting out with the budget, so on the fifth slide here, you'll see there was just a ridiculous, obscene amount of money to spend going into the session. $17.5 billion in the first biennium, and then in the second biennium, I think it's up to $22.5. And then the orange there is one-time money, and then the blue on the chart there is ongoing money. So as I said, with the DFL being in charge, it posed some unique challenges for us. Just the amount of legislation and the speed with which it was passed was just something that a lot of us have never seen. People who have been around the Capitol a lot longer than I have, never seen the amount of legislation and just how fast it was considered and went through. And then with the DFL sort of, you know, being concentrated more in the metro area, not as much representation in Greater Minnesota, that was a challenge for us. And so there wasn't really a whole lot of a backstop for proposals that could be potentially harmful to economic development and otherwise in Greater Minnesota. So we were able to work with the governor's staff and agency staff to sort of mitigate some of those things. But that was a unique challenge for us this year. Moving ahead to local government aid here, just a reminder on what we were asking for. It was $150 million increase, formula update. And the formula update is something that we do typically every 10 years with the census. Just revisit that to make sure that the formula is keeping up with the needs of cities and reflecting that, and there's a good balance with that. If you're really interested in the formula, it's pretty complicated, but it's on one of the sheets that I passed out there, that it sort of explains how it works. But it's a pretty complicated formula, but the main thing is that it's sort of a rebalance, and we did get that. So that was positive, and we think that that was beneficial to Greater Minnesota. So we did ask for the inflation adjustment. Did not get that. That didn't make it through the negotiations. That'll be something that we will go back to and ask, go back and ask for next year, so that we don't have to ask for an increase every year, so that that's indexed to inflation. LGA, some on the next slide here, we show some of the things that we were competing against with our LGA ask. So LGA is usually in the tax bill, and there was a $3 billion tax bill target, which is includes tax cuts and credits. LGA would be a credit. And some of the other things that they were competing against, or we were competing against with the legislature and their priorities, were child tax credits was a big one. There was a lot of money put into that. The public safety aid was a priority for the governor. That, and by the way, Waterville is getting $76,000 on that, out of the public safety aid, which is, you know, has to be used for specific public safety purposes. So it's not as flexible as LGA, but that can free up some of your LGA to be used for other things. And then the Walls checks, of course, was another one. So we were competing for kind of a small sliver of the pie there. The governor's proposal was $30 million in LGA, what he initially proposed. We put out a statement saying that we thought that was completely inadequate. We were not happy with that, given the amount of surplus that we had going into the session. And then he subsequently increased his request from $30 million to $40 million. There on the next slide there, you can see some of our mayors in testifying at the Capitol. And then, so slide 12 will show sort of where the different bodies were at. So our ask there is the first one on the left. And the reason it's higher in the second biennium is because of that inflation adjustment that we were asking for. The governor's was at 40 in the Senate. They were both at 40 million. The House, which was, you know, more of a champion for us on this issue, was at 100 million. And then we ended up at 80 million increase. So we think not too bad, all in all, at the end of the day. And then there you can see what Waterville will come out with based on the changes. Bonding. So bonding was an interesting one, which is probably our other top priority besides LGA. There was no bill passed in 2021 or 2022, so that was part of what sort of influenced the discussion. This is one area where the Republicans did have some leverage, because it takes 60% to pass a bonding bill, 60% of the vote. And with the Senate being 34-33 balance, they were able to extract something out of it for their votes. They originally were asking for tax cuts before doing any borrowing. They wanted to eliminate the income tax on Social Security income. That didn't end up happening. They were asking for significant tax cuts other than that, if they couldn't get that. That didn't really end up happening, but they were able to get $300 million in funding for nursing homes, which I think was, you know, a significant, something significant that they could say that they got out of it. There was a vote in March on the first bonding bill. That failed initially. You can see in the picture there, there's Bradley Peterson, our executive director. He's not too happy, because that was the day that the bill failed. And then there was really no discussions for a couple of months after that initial failure of the bill, until the last week or two, when the DFL threatened to pass a $1.3 billion all-cash bill, which they don't need Republican support on, since you only need the 60% for borrowing, and since it's all cash, they wouldn't need Republican votes. And so you can see on the 16th, slide number 16 here, the difference between what that cash bill would have looked like. the bonding bill that failed on the left-hand side there, that's what would have what we would have gotten for Public Facilities Authority, BDPI, housing, and you can see in the cash bill, and then in the bar chart there, just in the yellow is all that would have gone to Greater Minnesota, and the blue all would have gone to the metro area. So that would not have been a good bill for us. So we sent a strongly worded letter there. You can, there's a little excerpt of it on the next slide, and there's our lobbyist Eric Simonson talking with Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson, and I don't know what they were talking about, but we'd like to say that maybe that's where they got the deal done, because that was the day the bill passed. But you know, finally what happened then was the bill passed, we got the largest infrastructure package in Minnesota history, and you can see on the next slide there, it was the $1.5 billion in bonding plus $1.1 billion in the cash bill. And the DFL did agree to the $300 million for the nursing homes. So so that we think that was positive. Why did it happen? So it was pressure from groups like us, trade groups, union groups, city officials like yourselves, a credible threat from the cash bill, which would have not been positive for a lot of Greater Minnesota districts, and then also legislators willing to compromise. And what's not on here is that nursing home funding, but I think that was also a major reason why that got done. Couple things on environment, and then a couple things going forward, and then I'll let you get on with the rest of your meeting here. Lead pipes, I don't know if in Waterville if that's an issue for you folks, but it is an issue in a lot of Greater Minnesota cities. A lot of old pipes, old housing stock prior to like 1950s and older has a lot of those lead pipes, and the EPA is making all cities do an inventory of that by I think the end of 2024. So we did secure $240 million in funding for inventory and replacement of those. And it's going to take $900 million to do all lead service lines in the state, but $240 million, I guess, is sort of a good chunk to start. Also, other water infrastructure, which you know is so expensive, a lot of that in the bonding bill, $80 million for point source implementation grants, water infrastructure fund, federal matching funds, money for local projects as well, and then there was a little bit of money in the legacy bill as well. There was a couple of other things, like I had mentioned before, with the DFL being from the metro area, there's some environmental proposals that we thought could be detrimental to economic development in Greater Minnesota, which may make sense. You can see here there's our lobbyist Elizabeth Wafel, who does our environmental issues, testifying. We were able to narrow the scope of some of those proposals that would have, for example, for permitting, take into account cumulative impacts of all different types of pollution, and that would be an additional assessment that would have been required for permitting, and it would have just been kind of, we think, burdensome on the permitting process. And prevent some of those permits and renewals from being issued for water projects. And so we were able to limit that to the metro area where it might make sense in some of those areas where historically have bear the brunt of pollution, but in Greater Minnesota it just didn't make sense. And so we were able to play defense. So we were advocating for those certain things, but we were also trying to play defense on some of those harmful things as well. Coming up, 2024 legislative session. It's a traditional bonding year, so we'll see if there's another bonding bill. There could be some additional surplus spending depending on what the budget forecast shows, and then there'll be time for all kinds of policy. And I imagine there'll be a lot of things that are gonna have to be fixed from the last legislative session, just because with the speed and volume of legislation that went through, there's gonna be some unintended consequences mm-hmm. where they're gonna have to go back and work on some of those fixes. Also, constitutional amendments. The Environmental Trust Fund amendment is going to have to be is going to be on the ballot. Voters will decide if they want to extend that for another 25 years. That's the lottery money. And we have some elections coming up, of course, and another constitutional amendment, maybe on abortion or equal rights. And so that's what we're kind of expecting to come up next year. And then just on the next slide, there's a few upcoming dates, our Legislative Action Day, our fall conference in Willmar this fall, and then next year our summer conference. Roy was at our summer conference this year.
Yep.
And then next year we'll be in Wake Park, so we'll hope to have you back again. And so any other questions for me? That's all I have. Thank you again for having me.
Very good summary.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I just want to add thanks for all your guys' stuff.
Oh, and absolutely. All
the protecting greater.
Yeah, and then, let me know if there's anything that's, if you have any questions or if I can help, anything I can help with.
Okay.
Give me a call, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Before you get started, I just want to apologize being late. I got caught in a traffic jam on 169, and I couldn't get a detour around it.
There is.
I tried.
There's road construction all over. So.
I know.
Yeah, there was no. Thank you.
Thank you.
There was no way out of that, right?
No.
We'll forgive you this time.
Thank you.
Yeah. But don't let it happen again.
I won't go up to the cities late afternoon.
Okay, we can move on to the sale of the aerators. Teresa has information on that.
Yeah, so as you recall, we tried to sell these earlier in the year, and there was no takers or no one who wanted to acquire them. I have received offer from Jamie Fessel to purchase all three of them for $100 in aerators.
How long has it been since we've used these? Do you know?
Years. Roughly?
Years?
At least 4 years.
Mm-hmm. If we're not using them, and we haven't gotten any other bids on this, I'd say we move ahead. So I'll make a motion that we approve the sale of the aerators to Jamie Fessel for $100.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to see truth and taxation public hearing date.
So I'd like to recommend November 28th at 6 p.m. That is a Tuesday. Earliest you can hold them is the 25th of November and have to be completed prior to December 28th.
11:28 at what time?
I have 6 o'clock. They okay. Can't be held any sooner than 6.
Okay.
That works for me. It works for everyone else.
Yeah, works for me.
Do a quick check. I think so.
Bill?
Yeah, that's should be okay.
Bill?
So,
work for you?
I don't know what day of the week that is.
It's a Tuesday.
Tuesday.
6 o'clock is the earliest. The earliest time frame.
28th.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
That should work for me.
Yep, I can do it.
Make a motion then that we set the Truth and Taxation public hearing date and time for November 28th at 6 p.m.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
And because we couldn't set our next budget work session date during the last budget work session, I'd like to formally make a motion that we set our next budget work session for September 12th at 6:30 p.m.
Did we skip the work session date for rate study?
We'll just go back to it.
Okay. Sorry.
All right. And September 12th. I think I actually have that down already.
Yeah, I think we...
Should be okay.
We just couldn't officially set the last one.
You said September 12th?
Yep.
I thought we'd already scheduled that.
Yeah.
You had talked about it, but you didn't set it officially.
We couldn't officially set it.
Okay.
So I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Sorry, I jumped ahead on your...
So we have to do D yet.
Work session, date and rate study, that's the one we're doing on the 12th?
No.
No. This is
12th is the budget work session. So this is on the rate study, utility rate studies that ABDU is performing for us. The staff from ABDU is available October 10th and October 17th. And wanting to know if either one of those dates work.
I'm working on the 10th. The 17th is open for me, if that makes any difference to anyone.
I'm okay with either date.
Yeah, right now either one's okay. I prefer the 10th, but if you can't, 17th. We can look at the 17th.
What time?
October, your meetings usually start at 6.
Yes. Okay, 6 o'clock.
Does that work for you, Bill?
On the 10th?
17th.
17th, okay.
Another Tuesday. Or would a later time work for you better?
No, we'll be good at 6 o'clock.
And I'll make a motion that we set our work session date for the rate study for October 17th at 6 p.m.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
May I just add some additional discussion? So the presenter was wanting to know if she could remote for the meeting, or if you would want her to be in person.
I like in person better.
I think in person would work better for us, given the lack of technology.
Especially if she's conveying information.
Well, yeah, we're talking about rates. We're talking about livelihood here. Mm-hmm.
She just posed the question, so I put it out to council. I'll let her know that we are requesting in person.
Thank you.
Then we've got letter F next.
This is the 8F voting operations that was added to the agenda. Teresa has information on this.
Yeah, so the county received some money for voting. The county currently takes care of all of our absentee voting for us. The city's share of that is only like $200. So, or $120, $120.33 actually. And there's a lot of accounting that has to go along with it. And since the county is taking care of our absentees, I would just suggest that the county just keep our $120 and apply it towards the expenses that they incur on our behalf. That we would need a motion agreeing to sending, just having the county take that.
I'll make that motion that we have $120.33 go to the county and have them take care of that.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Reports.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council, with the passage of the THC ordinance here tonight, the reason I'll make sure that that gets published in the paper so that it takes effect. You all presumably got my memo regarding a subject property here in town. I don't want to get into any great detail on the record here tonight with regard to that property, but more than likely between now and next month, potentially between now and October, this matter is going to be coming to a head. We have received a complaint regarding the property. We're looking into it and essentially building a case right now, but at some point in time, we're going to have to make some decisions on that property in the next few months. At that point in time, we'll open it up to public discussion and we'll address it, but I think my memo to you kind of explained where we're at and where we may potentially be headed. I don't anticipate any cooperation with this property owner. It's not going to be like the situation that we had last year with the bar fire. That property owner was incredible. Well, he was cooperative, and it did require some tactful massaging to get it there. This property owner is going to be completely obstinate, and it is more than likely going to require the city spending some money.
Doesn't want to sell it?
Right now, with no pressure being put on him, he's not in a position to sell it. And, you know, whether or not the property can be sold, I mean, perhaps there's a mortgage against it. I don't know. If there's a mortgage against it, that makes it much more difficult to dispose of the property. So there are some intricacies there that are going to have to be worked out. But I do want you guys to know that it is percolating, and we're probably going to have to make some decisions here in the next few months, especially as colder weather starts to settle in. And this is a property that we have had problems with for the past couple of years. So we're kind of reaching the end of the game. Other than that, I don't have anything else for you right now. We'll be tackling the zoning aspect of the THC later this fall, probably this winter, as we get some additional guidance on it from the league. And then we'll also be wrestling with the some of the new employment law that was passed, specifically some of the benefits law side of things. It will require some revisions to our personnel policy, but we'll address those as we get a little closer to fall and early winter. Other than that, that's all I have for you. Unless anyone has questions for me. If anyone has questions for me, I certainly entertain them. I'll tell you, the police department has been active. You're going to notice some increased things there. So the police department has been busy.
Thank you.
Specifically this past weekend, there were a couple of arrests that were made. So they've been busy.
They do a good job.
I don't see Jason. So we don't have an engineer's report, right?
Correct.
Teresa?
So I will add something that Jason might have wanted you to be aware of, is that there is going to be a construction meeting, pre-construction meeting here on the storm sewer project on Herbert Street. And that's going to be on the 13th, just so you know that they're getting ready to kick that project off. My other comment isn't really a report, but just wanting to know. I was thinking about taking my report to written like you do the other department heads. I just want to know if there's any objection to that, or if you prefer me to continue as I am.
I have no objection to it.
No objection either way.
Okay, so then.
Whatever makes it easy for you.
Next month I'll put mine in writing then instead.
Okay.
And that's all I have to offer. Commissioner covered most of my topics.
There you go, stealing the limelight.
Okay, does council have anything to speak about?
I don't specifically. Thank you for all your work on the THC ordinances. I know that's a bit of a hurdle, but we appreciate your efforts on it.
Once we get through all this, I don't know what I'm going to talk about.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure things will come up.
The end of the line of it.
We'll keep you busy.
There we go. You bet.
Job security.
We talked a little bit about the street lights on Main Street, and our new LED lights are very bright in certain areas in town. We're left kind of missing our nice amber lights we had in the downtown of the amber glow. So
you're...
I don't think there's any fix to that.
You're saying that you preferred the amber versus the LED?
Yeah, with the zero mosquitoes and bugs next to the amber versus the 500,000 next to the LED lights. Yeah, I much prefer the amber.
Fair enough.
I know what it's like in our development. We got them in those lights because they're on all night, and the bugs just swarm to those lights.
At least it takes them away from the patios and the decks for you, right?
Well, yeah.
You have nothing else, Dave?
Nope.
Motion to adjourn, then.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone.